You're listening to the Mormon Expression Podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Mormon Expression is made possible through your generous support. Consider a subscription or a donation today.
And thanks. It's time for the annual Listener Essay Contest.
Essays must be recorded in any audio format and be less than 10 minutes, dealing with any topic in Mormonism.
And the winner will receive a $100 prize.
Essays may be submitted by sending a message to mail@mormonexpression.com.
We look forward to hearing your entries and good luck.
And finally, the Mormon Expression annual live event will be August 6, 2011 in Salt Lake City.
It's going to be a fabulous evening filled with music and the spoken word.
Get your tickets now by going to mormonexpression.com/tickets on our website.
We look forward to seeing everybody there.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and tonight we have another illustrious panel assembled. Let's go around the circle. First of all, from the netherworld, we have Glenn. Glenn, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me back, John.
Great. Welcome back.
Thanks.
And then around the circle, we have Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hello.
And then we have Zilpha. Hi, Zilpha.
Hello.
Hello. And then we have Robin. Welcome back, Robin.
Hello. What? So glad I could be here.
Is this
tonight.
Number three?
Four, maybe?
Yes, I think three, four.
All right. And then we have a studio audience. Welcome, studio audience. So tonight we are talking about, most of what we've broadcasted has been sort of well-researched and well-defined. This is the first time we're sort of going off the rails a little bit, and we'll explain that here in just a second. We're going to talk tonight about a infamous, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's been around for a while, and it is generally attributed to Marky Peterson, and it's his work called Steps in Overcoming Masturbation.
Did I ever mention that I'm an academically trained folklorist?
That might have come up.
You don't say.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd mention this because we've got a really good example of modern folklore here.
Oh, you mean in the fact that this talk is here at all?
Yeah. This is a perfect example of folklore that exists in multiple variation, which I'm sure you're going to cover. Being attributed to an authority figure in Marky Peterson, and maybe there's a real version out there somewhere, maybe not, but it certainly has its value as a piece of folklore and culture. And I may talk about that a little bit more as we go on. I may not, but I just thought it might be worth mentioning up front.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, so should we start with the talk, or should we start with Marky Peterson? They're both pieces of work.
Start with Marky Peterson.
All right. So Marky Peterson was a member of the Quorum of the Twelve, and he was generally the hitman for the Brethren for quite a while. There's a lot of he worked with the Deseret News and wrote a lot of sort of bombastic statements the church put out. He was a leader in the anti-ERA movement. He was in the Benson camp and was a strong proponent of the Birchers, connected to fluoride is a communist plot, all that sort of anti-hippie thinking. So he does have a history of being sort of this bombastic, over-the-top guy. In fact, he is attributed, and this is probably folklorish again, with saying that he'd been married to his wife for 44 years and he'd never seen her naked. That's your cue, Robert.
That's something I can't even possibly imagine.
So he was sort of a hitman of the 12 and a writer. So let's fast forward to 1981 when this thing supposedly happened. And probably the best, most authoritative source on it is from D. Michael Quinn. And he says, well, I'll just, it comes in a footnote. Actually, at the end of Quinn's book, he's got all these little blurbs about things that happened in history. And I will read you the blurb that, Quinn wrote for September 1981. It says, branch presidents at the Missionary Training Center in Provo received a 21-point handout to help both male and female missionaries avoid masturbation. Point 19, in very severe cases, it may be necessary to tie a hand to the bed frame with a tie in order that the habit of masturbation in a semi-sleep condition can be broken. In May 1995, article about masturbation, National Magazine Details published 17 of the recommendations and identified Apostle Marky Peterson as author of Steps in Overcoming Masturbation, A Guide to Self-Control. In 1996, spokesman at LDS headquarters denied that Elder Peterson authored this document and denied that it was ever distributed. So that's like the most authoritative historical piece of evidence we have on where this thing came from. So if you go look out on the internet, you'll find several different versions of this. And probably some of the discrepancy comes from potentially the original, which I have not seen. So if anybody out there in internet land has an original copy of the letter, we would sure like to get our hands on it. But anyway, apparently the Details magazine, and I could find several references to that article, but I couldn't find it myself from 1995. And that's probably where it has come about. There have been rumors that that comes in a pamphlet, and I was able to find on the Snoop's website, somebody had posted a reference that they got out of the University of Utah library to the pamphlet. But frankly, I don't believe the pamphlet exists. I think that's a figment of somebody's imagination. The pamphlet is supposedly named Keeping Your Hands to Yourself, excerpts from Steps in Overcoming Masturbation, A Guide to Self-Control, pamphlet by the late Elder Marky Peterson. You know, that's probably the name of the Details article. That doesn't sound like the name of the pamphlet.
No way. Yeah. There's no way that's the title. That's too convenient, Keeping Your Hands to Yourself. It's Keeping Your Hands Away from Yourself is what he's really trying to get to. There's no way that's the
keeping
title.
Your hands to yourself. Oh yeah, yeah. Keeping your hands. I mean, to the bedpost.
That's too suspicious.
Yeah. So I'm stating for the record, we do not know for sure if this came from Marky Peterson or if this is even real. But I have been quoted some of these things in church auspice, and I don't know if other people have. Mm-hmm. You know, in talks while I was a missionary, if this thing is not real, it didn't originate with Mormons, it has been adopted by the Mormons.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I saw a site today that's what's it called, Light Planet.
Yes. I have that right here.
Yeah. And and this was quoted in that.
Yeah,
so
they like incorporated it and also kind of edited it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And I think whether it's real and you can attribute it to Marky Peterson or not, as you said, there are certainly flavors of Mormonism in here. And what I prepared as I went through this were actual examples of where I've seen things like this occur in people that I've associated with, whether it's at BYU or in my mission, where I've kind of seen real life examples of this.
You mean people trying to apply these principles
for the discussion as well, but I don't know.
People trying to put these principles into action.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, ways that they're actually trying to do the steps that are on the list to prevent masturbation. Yeah.
I had a mission companion that did about half of these things nightly.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's alive and well.
It is not well, but it is alive.
Yeah. I mean, it is part of the culture. I mean, the attitudes that are reflected in this document are real, whether the document itself is, I would say.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, that makes sense.
And besides, it's just a completely fascinating list of things, ways to not masturbate. It's quite fun.
All right, before we get into the what the little letter or pamphlet or whatever the hell it was actually says, let's talk about a really important question, which is why? What? I mean, I read you the one that came from the Quinn quote that talked about strapping your wrist to a bedpost. Obviously, these are pretty heady measures that people would take. So the question is, why in the LDS paradigm would such measures need to be taken against something that seems so innocuous?
Innocuous. Well, I've got the miracle of forgiveness here. He talks about how...
Who's he?
Kimball. Talks about how
What year was that? I'm sorry. What year was that published? Miracle forgiveness. 77 is what I have in mind.
69.
Wow. Holy crap. Yeah.
And 69. Depending on which version, they may say very different things.
Oh, okay. So this is the 23rd printing, 1994. But anyway, his idea that he's putting forth in this book is that masturbation can lead to homosexuality. And so this was a big fear for a lot of people that masturbating would cause you to become homosexual. And then actually he says, done in private, I don't know, you know, how many situations you're masturbating not in private, but done in private, it evolves often into mutual masturbation. How do you mutually masturbate in private? But okay, practiced with another person of the same sex, and thence into total homosexuality.
You know, Zilpha, my father-in-law worked vice for the LA County Sheriff, and he would go to these XXX movie theaters where there was, you know, mutual masturbation kind of things that I wouldn't say lead to homosexuality, but where homosexuality is a thing. So that might have been what President Kimball had in mind when he was talking about.
Well, why did he say, for done in private, it evolves often into mutual masturbation? I don't understand.
I mean, he made me think that that's what it evolves into, where people attend these XXX theaters and they're helping each other out.
So, but what if you are homosexual? And you're with somebody who also happens to be homosexual.
I'm not saying he's right, but I'm just assuming that's probably what he has in mind.
It may be one of your first homosexual encounters, and therefore later on, if you're being interviewed and they say, you know, how did this start? Well, I was, you know, we were kind of mutually masturbating, and then masturbating.
I think here you have a classic example of false, you know, causality, and we haven't gone through Kimball's Miracle of Forgiveness, but it's a pretty weird book. And I think Kimball is not sort of normal when it comes to sexuality. He has some really bizarre ideas about sexuality. I would dare even venture that he might be asexual, because he just, in the book, he seems not to understand human sexuality at all. He just gets everything wrong. But, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. But, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I don't know if your 94 version is a little more politically correct than the one I read, but my memory is that he indeed went even farther. So masturbation, mutual masturbation, homosexuality, bestiality. So that's...
Oh, it leads into bestiality.
Yeah, the one who read me this afternoon, he mentions bestiality. But here's my take on Kimball. So here's a man who doesn't understand it. So where would he get most of his knowledge about it? Well, he would get it from interviewing people. And oftentimes, they would send the hard cases up to the general authorities. And my understanding is Kimball was the one, it was the member of the 12 who was assigned to deal with these cases. So if he starts probing into their history, I think there's going to be a natural progression. I mean, let's face it. Let's be frank. Anal sex is a pretty advanced sex practice. And not everybody who becomes a homosexual immediately jumps into that, you know, sort of full-on sodomy. So they're going to go through a progression, and they're going to have it just like heterosexuals have. They're going to have a natural progression of what sort of sex acts they engage in. And what he's describing is sort of like a normal progression if you're a homosexual male. You know, you're going to masturbate individually, because that's what everybody does. And then eventually you're going to get a boyfriend or somebody, and you're probably going to touch each other and stuff before you go for the full Monty. And all he's describing is, yeah, but of what normally happens. But what he's missing out on is he's got this weird sort of causality. Because you could make the case that masturbation leads to being a general authority too. Because I'm sure 95% of those guys masturbated before they became
general authorities. It can lead to anything, John.
Yeah, because it's a nonsensical argument.
Do we have the statistics about how many people actually do masturbate? Well,
I can tell you what it was when I was 11 years old.
I'm sure it hasn't changed much.
It was not, what I read in an encyclopedia was that 90% of men and 60% of women.
Oh, another 10% lie.
Another 10% lie.
Glenn, you were just saying you had something.
You were talking about the causality in President Kimball's Miracle of Forgiveness. And I've got this quote that it's always been kind of humorous to me, but it fits this perfectly. And he starts off saying, How like the mistletoe is immorality. The killer plant starts with a sticky, sweet berry. Once rooted, it sticks and grows a leaf, a branch, a plant. It never starts mature or full grown. It always transplants an infant. Nor does immorality begin in adultery or perversion. Those are full grown plants. Little indiscretions are the berries. Indiscretions like sex thoughts, sex discussions, passionate kissing. The leaves and little twigs are masturbation and petting and such, growing with every exercise. So it's kind of like Alma 32.
The little twigs growing.
All right, so
that explains a dream I had.
So the brethren, particularly Kimball, and the miracle forgiveness.
Well,
is still in
Broussard, we got it.
We'll get to Broussard in a second because he's going to take it up a notch. But for Kimball, masturbation was bad because it led to homosexuality. That once you started down the path of masturbation, you were going to end up committing homosexuality. Does anybody know, has there been any research in the church? Is there a higher instance of male homosexuality among Mormons than among the general populace?
I doubt that study's been done.
I've heard it anecdotally, though.
I would think if there is, it's only for opportunity. When you start locking a bunch of 19-year-old horny males together, you know, there's what are they called? You know, like the prison sex thing. I never saw any of this on my mission. I've heard people talk about this stuff. I never saw anything that I would consider sort of homoerotic. But maybe I'm not real tuned into that sort of stuff.
It's all the wrestling and pinching and slapping butts.
I didn't see any of that.
Oh.
No, I never saw any of that on my mission.
That's like
either.
The military, too. Do they have a higher instance of
I'm sure they would say they
homosexuality.
Don't. But
are we done discussing though the harms of masturbation? Are you sticking to this one thing about homosexuality?
No,
I think there are other harms.
No, we've got other
well.
Harms. I just wanted to drive that point home that I think for a lot of people, and it's been repeated over and over again, that masturbation led to homosexuality, and that was one of the main reasons it needed to be avoided.
That wasn't a reason I was ever given.
Well, it's interestingly enough, almost everything about masturbation in the church is aimed at men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes,
right.
Women were oddly missing in the miracle of forgiveness, which means with men, they at least acknowledge it. With women, it is so bad, it cannot even
it
be mentioned.
It doesn't even happen.
Well, if you think about most like bishops and stake presidents, I think they would be more comfortable asking, you know, men and boys about masturbation than they'd be asking women. So
yeah.
It might just be it's missing for want of embarrassment or whatever.
I don't know. I think that they don't like to think that women have strong sexual urges. They like to think that the men are on the prowl and the women are the prey.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, the women give pleasure. They don't receive it.
But that doesn't happen like in the young women's program,
no.
At girls' camp and things like that.
No.
They don't bring it up. And
no.
I think, I mean, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and I think that they have discussions like that with her.
Well, now, they might nowadays, but
the rules have changed. I think there's getting to be more of an acknowledgement of that. But I still see people talking about they have a special meeting where they bring all the men together and they talk about masturbation. And
the women, they do the lift cupcake exercise.
No, with women, with the ones I hear about, they will talk about how to keep your man from masturbating. Like they'll train the women on how to search like internet files.
Oh, well, that's porn.
Yes.
Well, I guess that goes along with masturbation. Yeah.
Hand in hand.
So what are the other reasons why they give why we shouldn't be masturbating?
Yeah.
Well, it dulls sensitivity to the spirit is the main one that I've heard. Because if you're focusing so much on your physical bodily pleasures, then you won't be able to feel the Holy Ghost prompting you.
And it's also like an exercise in self-control, that if you can't control your body, you know, in the earth, how can you expect to become a god?
Right.
Yeah, I've heard that one too, yeah.
The little one that stuck with me is that it's the sin next to murder. So
mm-hmm. Yep.
That one kind of...
Oh, because you're wasting, you're abusing the procreative powers.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's that Monty Python song, right? Every sperm is sacred. That's funny. Yeah.
Hey, Major Bittimum on the chat says that the mission president told the guys in his own meeting that the girls in the zone were masturbating too. He said, unfortunately, there were only two sisters in the meeting. they probably became a lot more popular after that.
That's funny.
All right. So should we go to Bruce R.? for the A-bomb of masturbation?
Well, I don't know about that, but it's a killer quote. Okay, so he says, virtue may be lost by degrees, and chastity may be destroyed a step at a time, which is like the mistletoe argument. Immodesty, necking and petting, themselves a form of sex immorality, frequently lead to much grosser offenses. Every degree and type of lewdness, lasciviousness, and licentiousness of concupiscence, I don't know what that word is, prostitution and whoredoms of sodomy, onanism, and what did you say, onanism?
Onanism? Usually it refers to masturbation.
Well, yeah, and spilling seed on the earth.
Okay, and homosexuality.
Oh, that's right. Onan was the name of the guy in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Of masturbation,
yes.
Incontinence, so no peeing your pants, and perversion of rape, seduction, and infidelity of adultery, fornication, and uncleanliness. I thought he just kind of picked every word he could think of that had to do with genitalia.
You know, I think he was masturbating as he wrote it.
All these things, as well as many others, are condemned by divine edict and are among Lucifer's chief means of leading souls to hell. Fine distinctions between them are of no particular moment and are not necessary to observance of the divine laws involved. So
that's the key.
That's the key. Fine distinctions between them are of no particular moment and are not necessary to observance of the divine laws.
So for Bruce R. McConkie, masturbation and
rape
are in the same category. There's no difference.
No real distinctions.
And where's the
part
where he says
so you're raping your own penis or vagina? Is that it?
That's why it's called self-abuse, young lady. Where's the part where he says that it's the second only to murder?
I can't find it. I'm looking and looking.
Oh, yeah. He goes on to say, of course, all these sins together are second only to murder. So for Bruce R. McConkie, and I'm sure many of you have heard this repeated, you know, masturbation is worse than insert any other crime except murder here, you know?
Well, it's murdering of all those tiny little sperms that could make little babies.
It's just a weird sort of teaching. I don't know. It seems to lack any nuance. I don't know where in all they got it. Now we can go back to the Victorians and through, you know, the post-war period where there was a general cultural zeitgeist against masturbation. And I think they were riding that wave, but, to go as far as McConkie went, is very odd, I think.
You know, yeah, nothing dies when ladies.
Good point, Sinclair. Yeah.
Oh,
you are
that's
spot
funny.
On.
Yeah. when you know, Joseph Smith, when you read his introduction or whatever, when he writes about he had his indiscretions of youth, I think it was in between his Moroni visitations, and he talks about he succumbed to the normal foibles of youth. I always wondered when I was a kid if that included masturbation.
Yeah, I did too.
In his mind. And I just would be curious to know if he had the same thoughts about it that like a McConkie does or a Hardline. I really doubt that he would be that militant.
No, it seems Joseph was kind of the hippie of all the prophets, right?
Well, he had mixed.
Yeah, free love.
I definitely think this sort of pharisaical writing would never come from Joseph Smith. You know, this is not the early sort of writing that the early way the church thought. This is something that came later, much later, where that you get really sort of pedantic and down to defining exactly what you do and exactly what you think. And I don't want to attribute this sort of stuff to Smith. He was much better than that.
Like, I can imagine him feeling guilt. I mean, feeling, you know, okay, this is something that is of youth. I should not do this if I'm going to be, you know, dealing with gods and visiting angels. I mean, when I was a kid, I could imagine that. I mean, because I kind of felt that same way about myself. If I'm going to be, you know, on a mission and things like that, I shouldn't be. But, you know, I always looked at Joseph Smith as a role model that way. But I never went so far as the hardcore McConkie type thing or even the miracle of forgiveness stuff. But
a lot of times the only reason that they bring up not to masturbate is because you'll feel guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And then you have to wonder, why are we all feeling guilt and shame?
Yeah, but that's sort of a cop-out on their part, because they can't say that when they're installing guilt and shame
into
people.
That's what I'm saying.
You know.
Yeah.
Which came first?
There's no doubt that in a lot of conservative Christian movements, the LDS Church included, they want to make those sort of things very shameful for the
but
people
what
participating.
What good does that do? Okay, here's my question. What harm really does masturbation cause anybody?
Well, I think physiologically, I mean, we've shown it doesn't cause any problem. There's no hair on the palms. There's no blindness. There's no
hair on the
there's,
palms.
There's no any of that stuff. And there, it would seem that the research would show there's no increased libido or anything like that.
Although I think sometimes it does help women to keep their libido.
There's studies that show it helps reduce prostate cancer, that it helps
higher.
All sorts of things.
Definitely. Because as we were discussing the difference between men and women just earlier tonight, with men being a gas stove and women being electric, they take a lot of time to warm up and a lot of time to warm down. Cool down.
Yeah. So anyway, Robina and I are saying that it actually helps to keep a woman's libido running.
Yes.
The more it's being used.
Well, and I think, you know, as long as we're talking about the positives from a female perspective, a lot of women, and especially young women in conservative movements like the Mormon Church, grew up with no idea of their anatomy, with no idea of the mechanics of an orgasm or even sex. And to introduce masturbation to them younger would have healthier effects for their relationships, I would believe.
Yeah, we discussed that in the female sexuality podcast.
So now the question does it do psychological harm? The answer seems to be, if you believe it's wrong, then it does. If you don't believe it's wrong, then it doesn't. So this is where, if we're going to wag our finger at the church on this issue, it's they create the problems associated with it. And we know that there have been suicides. There have been, I know people. Honestly, I know people who don't actively participate in the church who are otherwise believers because they believe they can't kick masturbation. That alone.
Wow.
There's definitely a negative psychological effect. And you know, one of the things that I've argued before with the church is, let's say if you had a bell curve of people, and this is sort of the bell curve is how honest they are or how much guilt they feel towards those things, how seriously they take the church. The people who are really, really super serious, they're going to do everything they can, all of this talk, to stop masturbating. Then you've got the people down at the other end who don't give a rip. They'll lie to anybody. It's the people in the middle that'll feel guilty. So the harder you press on things like masturbation, what you do is you weed out that middle group. And you have just the sort of sexual loonies like Boyd K. Packer and Spencer Kimball, who talk about things like you can control sexual urges and not have them at all. I mean, that's just lunacy in my mind. And then you get people who are manipulative, who will use the church, you know, who don't care at all about trying to obey on any front. You know, they'll go down their fifth of scotch and then go be the stake president the next day because they're sociopaths. It's this middle group who might otherwise be good spiritual contributing people who say, well, I'm not worthy to take that calling. But meanwhile, the sociopaths and the weird asexuals are the ones who get promoted up in positions. So the church really sort of, by this sort of teaching that normal, everyday sexual behavior is deviant, damages its own clientele, its own basis.
John, so are you saying that everyone that's in a position of church leadership is either on one of those two extremes, and anybody that's kind of in the middle is out?
No, I wouldn't argue
it's
to that extreme.
It's an overgeneralization.
But I would think that you select for those sort of things. You know, it's...
Because, yeah, I mean, you've got some people that are extreme, but I don't
think across the board that way. You know, for me growing up, I was never asked. I know a lot of people were. I was never asked if I masturbated until I got to BYU. They didn't ask that question.
Here's a general question. What callings, what things would you not be allowed to do if you were open with your bishop about being a masturbator?
A
serial masturbatist.
And this is the last point I want to make before we get to the actual text, is if you go to the church handbook of instructions, it does not mention masturbation at all. And the church, I think, has purposefully in the last 20 years or so been vague about the topic. There are no directions to bishops or stake presidents on what to do with masturbators. And I know that We shouldn't say masturbators. We should say, like, the membership.
Everybody.
Right? Normal people.
So there are bishops who will tell people they can't go to the temple. There's others who will say, you need to try, and then that's where they'll leave it. You know, and they'll say, well, it's not, so they're all across the board. And unfortunately, that leads to that uneven enforcement where there's people who are otherwise, would be great contributors and worthy who are not. And there's people who are.
And who have to miss their siblings' weddings and stuff because they masturbated last month.
Right. Right.
How much of that do you think is self-imposed guilt and how much is like church-imposed guilt? And,
well, it's
and
self-imposed
otherwise.
Because of what the church teaches.
Much of what they kind of infer that the church is teaching. You know, like when I think about my own situation, because I was maybe 17 or 18 years old when this was me. And I went to my bishop when I was 17 and I brought this before him. I scheduled an interview for a patriarchal blessing because I was just embarrassed to go and say, Bishop, I've masturbated. And, so I did, like, I hummed and hawed and I went around the thing. And then finally he was ready to give me my temple recommend. And I just had to come out with it. And I said, Bishop, I did this. And he looked at me like it was no big deal. And he's like, okay, well, He just treated it like it was nothing. And he said, well, I think you can still get your patriarchal blessing. And I was I was actually disappointed.
It's probably
that he didn't make a bigger deal about it. And I, even though I had my recommend to get my patriarchal blessing, I put myself under a self-imposed disciplinary action. I didn't know anything about this Marky Peterson thing. I don't think I ever saw it until, years later when the internet came around. But was that because of teachings from McConkie or just my own stuff?
Didn't they talk to you about self-abuse?
No.
He was
completely cool about it when I look at it
him.
In retrospect.
I'm talking
but
about
I wouldn't accept it.
At other times during your growing up years, they never mentioned sexual immorality.
When I was 13, they had this special thing for all the boys. They divided all the boys up as a special mutual night. And this guy was talking about pipes and factories. And I remember just sitting there through the whole thing saying, what the hell is this guy talking about? Never once mentioned masturbation. Never once mentioned penis. Anything that would be like real information, And I was honestly curious. Is he talking about what I think he's talking about? But I was confused. So I think for Glenn, I think it's largely a function of if your bishop's masturbating or not. If he is, he's probably going to be more lenient. But here's some of the things we got from the chat room. One of the guys said that on his mission, he wasn't allowed to go to the temple with the other missionaries because of masturbation. Another individual said that in their state currently, it's a 6-month waiting period if you've masturbated before you can go to the temple.
Oh, wow.
And this is why I would lay the blame at the church for this one, for pansying out of this, for not having a policy,
because
it allows for this sort of uneven enforcement of this.
People are going to, like you said, if the bishop is understanding and probably has struggled or has issues with masturbation himself, then he'll be a lot less strict.
But regardless,
he's struggling or having issues or he's just, he doesn't see that it's a problem.
You still hit that wave head on, though, Glenn. Regardless of whether or not the bishop was lenient or another bishop would have, punished you, you knew that it was wrong just from the teachings of the church, from what your feelings were.
I felt personally.
Right. Yeah. So then you felt like you weren't punished and you wanted to punish yourself and you wanted those things. So regardless of whether or not we have a really cool bishop or whatever, you're still the one carrying the weight.
Yes.
And that interview that Tom did a month or so ago with the bishop, he got a lot of flack on the comment board from people saying, you're still sending confusing messages to the youth who come in. Maybe you don't give them a hard time about masturbation or not, but the church still has this message or not. But I would say even if the bishop says it's okay, whatever the individual does, I think it's still a lot up to them. And maybe it's because of messages like we've covered with McConkie or Packer's little factory talk or other things like that are out there in the ether.
I'll tell you about the first time I confessed. They were coming up on – I must have been 14. They were coming up on a ward temple baptism night. So, I felt bad about passing the sacrament, but I felt – awful, like it was a, you know, a mortal sin to go through the temple that way. But I was not one who really wanted to confess. So I brought up my courage. I confessed. And the bishop was just sort of nonchalant about it. And but he didn't tell, you know, he said, yeah, you know, you might want to, you know, avoid, you know, it just some sort of low-key sort of Marky Peterson stuff, but not nearly that bad. But he didn't say, he didn't like, I pronounce you clean, son. And he didn't tell me to go like do some Hail Marys or something. I went out of that interview feeling great, the best I'd felt in years in the church. But it only lasted for about 4 or 5 days till I started second guessing that again and saying, well, he didn't really tell me that I was absolved. You know, so I came out feeling awful. And that's where I say this whole thing with the church, where they allow it to ride in that middle territory, you know, they own some of this guilt. And unfortunately, like I said before, the suicides and other
cutting
terrible actions.
Real mm-hmm. self-abuse. Mm-hmm.
and maybe a lot of that comes from just being in a culture where you feel like someone has stewardship over you that can or should resolve you of your sins, instead of feeling like you can have a direct relationship with whoever, whatever, and be worthy all on your own.
Supposed to be a middleman. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Enough of all this talk about bopping the bacon. Are we ready to go on to the are we ready to go on to the speech? Did you have something you want to say, Robin?
My primary memory about my baptism, which I always felt so guilty because we were supposed to feel all special afterwards, and when they for the Holy Ghost, all of that neat stuff. And all I could think about was the day before saying, this is the last day I can masturbate.
7 years old? 8 years old?
Oh, yes, probably two.
Yeah, you don't need to have a... I mean, males develop in a different way with their genitalia than females do. Females are born into the world with that ability.
Uh-huh. Yes, definitely. And I know for me, at least as a child, I had a brother who died when I was 4 years old. He was 11. And my entire family was not emotionally available at all. I was left entirely on my own for a big chunk of my life. And that was how I comforted myself. That's how I survived. It was actually a very loving act that I provided for myself for survival. So when I got a little bit older and learned, oh my heavens, what I had just done, to realize that the act of loving myself was dirty,
mm-hmm.
it was really kind of a rotten thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you think you learned at 7 years old that baptism meant you couldn't or weren't supposed to do that anymore?
Well, because I knew it was wrong, because every time my parents saw me, they kind of went a little crazy.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I recognized there was something wrong with it as soon as my parents caught me. But
gotcha. Yeah.
All right, you guys ready to take a look at the talk here? So for those following along at home, I'm looking at the text. We talked in the beginning, there are multiple texts. The L... Dolphin, LDOLPHIN.org/Mormon.html. Seems to be a fairly consistent content of the talk or letter or whatever the heck it was.
Whoever wrote this is like genius. I mean, these are so fun. I couldn't even come up with something more just ridiculous about masturbation than this.
It reads like something from The Onion. It reads like parody. It really does.
Yes,
and if it hadn't been around for so long, you would think it was. So,
but that's what makes me wonder. I mean, it's just what makes me skeptical of the whole thing. Like, really? But go ahead and read them.
It's so fun.
But like we said in the beginning, even if they're not, they have been sucked up into the general zeitgeist. So,
and there has been probably somebody who has tried every single one of these steps numerous times.
Yeah. So there's 8 steps to self-control, then there's 21 suggestions. So let's start with our 8 steps to self-control. Never touch the intimate parts of your body except during normal toilet processes.
No way. There's no way, John.
Avoid being alone as much as possible. Find good company and stay in this company. No, you know that this is in the White Bible.
During normal toilet processes.
There were missionaries who said
this is somebody
the only time
who's intentionally trying to satirize, like, prophets.
How else would you say it?
This is an old guy writing this.
This is no Boise way. Packers. No way. I can't accept it. Except during normal toilet processes.
How would you say that, Glenn?
Yeah, in a more... If you were 90 years old, how would you write
the
that?
The intimate parts of your body, except during normal toilet processes. I just can't. No, come on.
What do you... You want him to say, unless you're wiping your...
Yes, actually.
Your tushy?
I don't know. It's just fishy to me. And until I see an original document, it's just going to be fishy to me. I've just got these red
you're
flags.
Allowed to, you're
That's
allowed to have those feelings.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like I said, I agree that these sentiments are, you know, are out there, but to really attribute it this to this one person that was delivered in this way in a pamphlet
just,
or writing.
You're just
writing
quibbling
thing.
Over language because that is in the missionary handbook right now.
Is it?
Yes. It says you're not allowed to be alone.
I'm talking about except during normal toilet processes. That just seems absurd.
When do you think you should touch your intimate parts of your body, Glenn?
I'm right, talking. Right.
What would be an abnormal toilet process, Glenn?
Toilet process seems
We're
absurd.
Crossing a few boundaries here.
All right. Number two.
Sorry, but...
If you are associated with other persons having this same problem, you must break off their friendship. Never associate with other people having the same weakness. Don't suppose that two of you will quit together. You never will. You must get away from people of that kind. Just being in their presence will keep your problem foremost in your mind. The problem must be taken out of your mind, for that is where it really exists. Your mind must be on other and more wholesome things.
My first thought about this one is I decided to look at Sons of Helaman just to torture myself today. And
tell us what Sons of Helaman is.
Oh, it's actually an officially sanctioned group. Oh, I'll tell you what what they say. Conquering Morality Challenges Pre- and Post-Mission, and it's specifically about masturbation and porn addictions for young men. Of course, I don't know. I'm not sure they want to introduce the women.
Now, you said porn addiction. I want to be clear that when the church says porn addiction, they mean porn usage.
I absolutely understand that.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
Oh, to our audience.
Yeah, yeah. They don't make any distinction between addiction and just...
Yes, definitely. And so this idea, and it's kind of funny because right in here it says, don't associate with anyone like that. They might actually tell you they feel that way too, and you might feel normal for just a moment. Anyway, but part of their whole program is the camaraderie, because you meet with other male masturbators who are trying to prepare for a mission. And sometimes, and I've heard they have a group of mothers that meet separately.
Wow.
Ooh. Nothing like having your mother there discussing your masturbation.
Well, I know when I read this one, I just thought, because for me, after one of those interviews to go to the temple like John had, and I had confessed about my masturbation, I came out and I felt really horrible. And then one of my friends said, so, you know, was there anything you had to... you know, talk to the bishop about? And I was like, it was really, you know, embarrassing. And then he said, well, you know, I had to. And so we finally came around to telling each other. And wow, what a relief that was, and what a support we were to each other. It wasn't harmful at all. So I think this number two is just bizarre.
Well, I want to get to number three, because that's what I have a big problem with.
Before we go to that, for me, for number two, this seems very contrary, because I had several people who part of their friendship and part of their friendship building was confessing their masturbation and actually saying, will you help me with this? And they felt that bringing this out in the open was a way of conquering it.
Right. So number two.
I think it was really promiscuous disclosure. And we know LDS folks seem to be prone to that. And even ex-Mormons.
Well, I think that this is a standard technique of control. You know, you don't want people to communicate this, because then people will think it's normative behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, number three. When you bathe, do not admire yourself in the mirror.
John.
Never stay in the bath for more than 5 or 6 minutes. Just long enough to bathe and dry and dress, and then get out of the bathroom and into a room where you have some member of your family present.
I can't believe
if you sit in the tub for more than 5 or 6 minutes.
Do not admire yourself in a mirror. It just seems like whoever wrote this, whoever concocted this, was very aware of the, you know, what you mentioned, John, the whole homophobic language in a President Kimball type thing, and they were playing to that in here.
Yeah, Marky Peterson.
Yeah, like, oh, because we're going to construct a pseudo witness in Marky Peterson, somebody who's homophobic. So we're going to put this in here, somebody who would say, "Don't admire yourself in a mirror." But
yeah,
I would say that.
I
can't imagine that's real.
All right, are you done, Buzz Killington?
Go ahead.
All right, number four. When in bed, if that is where you have your problem for the most part, dress yourself for the night so securely that you cannot easily touch your vital parts, and so that it would be difficult and time-consuming for you to remove those clothes by the time.
Actually, you're so busy laughing, but this is heartbreaking.
By the time you started to remove protective clothing, you would have sufficiently controlled your thinking that the temptation would leave you.
John, I'm glad you have a lot of restrictive clothing right now.
Yeah, me too. Oh, man. So I guess,
hey, can I do a buzz kill?
Zip up.
I
want a buzz kill. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
One of my memories of seventh grade, we had this crazy speaker for some reason. I have no idea what she was qualified to talk about besides crazy. And she told us about two children she adopted, little tiny children, 2 or 3 years old, who had this horrible masturbation problem. But she told us about seventh graders. She's telling seventh graders about putting them in very restrictive onesies and, like, you know, safety pinning them together. And I'm like, those poor children, they've gone through hell probably. And to take away their one comfort, the one way they can feel better. What a meanie.
All right. Number five. If the temptation seems overpowering while you're in bed, get out of bed and go to the kitchen and fix yourself a snack.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is the middle of the night and even if you're not hungry. And despite your fears of gaining weight, the purpose behind the suggestion is that you get your mind on something else. You are the subject of your thoughts, so to speak.
I want to see somebody out there make an amendment to this. And please put out a list of very detailed which snacks to avoid. Like,
oh, bananas and
avoid the bananas, avoid hot dogs, you know, all the things that you cannot make as a snack. But
apple
what are the acceptable
pie.
Snacks? Oh, if somebody's geez. Really going to get creative with the next Marky Peterson thing, I want to say cucumbers. Who's saying this?
I have
we're
to
reading
admit,
the list here. The list.
Glenn, that the part that says, and despite your fears of gaining weight, sounds a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, well, because this is somebody who's admiring themselves in a mirror. You don't want to gain weight with your midnight snack. It's a disincentive to overpowering temptations. Oh, come on. I mean,
well, I
do admit this is a very fun. there's so much appeal to this. I mean, that's why this thing has lasted and it continues in multiple variations. But
well, the sad thing is that a lot of people believe that these could actually work. If they go and get themselves a snack, then, you know, then their masturbation fix for the night is over. They don't have to worry about it anymore.
It just makes a bigger mess.
Whipped cream.
Number six. Never read pornographic material. Never read about your problem. Keep it out of mind. Remember, first a thought, then an act.
Oh, we're reading about it.
The thought pattern must be changed. You must not allow this problem to remain in your mind. When you accomplish that, you soon will be free of the act. And this is where I say, I mean, to a degree, that's true, probably. But, you know, I heard it said a little while ago, you know, our language evolved in us about, you know, maybe 12,000 years ago. Probably a lot of our modern acts in the last, you know, 100,000 years. But sex goes all the way back. You know, the sex drive in the human being is billions of years old. And you just can't will your way out of that sort of stuff. You know, you can control it. I'm not saying we don't have self-control, but you can't by practicing, pretending that your mind is a stage or anything, will yourself not to have sexual urges.
Yeah, this is self-abuse. You know, to say, never read about your problem. You know, keep it out of your mind. I mean, you just, the contortionism that you'd have to do.
Yeah. It's everybody right now, don't think about bananas.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's just not possible.
John.
And stop reading this.
Yeah. And stop reading this right now. Because...
Okay. Number seven, put wholesome thoughts into your mind at all time. Read good books, church books, Scriptures, sermons of the brethren, make a daily habit of reading at least one chapter of scripture, preferably from one of the four gospels in the New Testament or the Book of Mormon. The four gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, above anything else in the Bible, can be helpful because of their uplifting qualities. So you, when you see stuff like this, Glenn, you still think this is a big jokester writing all this?
Absolutely. The more I read of it, the more convinced I become.
All right. 8, pray. But when you pray, don't pray about this problem. That will tend to keep it in your mind more than ever. Pray for faith. Pray for understanding of the scriptures. Pray for the missionaries, the general authorities, your friends, your families. But keep the problem out of your mind by not mentioning it ever. Not in conversation with others, not in your prayers. Keep it out of your mind. Where's the one?
Yeah, don't think about the problem as you're praying. Just think very hard about not thinking about it. But don't think too hard about thinking about not thinking about it, because then you're thinking about not thinking about it will just lend you to think about not thinking about it even more. And God thinks that's pretty bad. So why don't you just think about that?
Major Bittimum?
No, New Order 13:1 received a copy of this from his mission president when he told the mission president about his problem with masturbation.
Uh-huh. So you get a copy of some piece of folklore from another authority figure, and you go, okay, well,
then it's
must
no
be
longer
true.
Folklore.
That's my point from the beginning.
Real. Yes, it is.
It's real.
It doesn't matter. It's like you're saying Mormons don't really believe in Adam and Eve because there was no Adam and Eve. That's a false construction. They do believe in Adam and Eve.
They do believe in this.
The Adam and Eve were not real.
You've got the Adam and Eve story in the temple. So does that make it more real?
So if we say Mormons believe in these points, at least some of them do. You're saying, no, they can't because somebody wrote this other than Marky Peterson. That's irrelevant.
I'm suspicious. Until I see the original from Marky Peterson. Maybe he did.
So once it's distributed,
Glenn, it doesn't matter who wrote it. It matters that it's being distributed to people who have a masturbation issue as a solution.
And it's still folklore.
From the church.
You're thinking of a different definition of folklore than I am. But it's
well,
still
it may be that some people are accepting it.
Where's my? I need a drop for a Tom sigh. What does it matter that it's folklore? I mean, it's obviously taken as gospel truth by some. It's distributed as if it's real. So, and that makes it real.
What I mean by folklore is that this has been created by someone other than who it's being attributed to in Mark E. Peterson, and it's continually being updated and changed. Like you look at all of the multiple versions that are on there, there's no consistency in actually what's on. I mean, there's different versions that are out there. So which version did the mission president give the guy that wrote it on the board?
The basic suggestions are the same.
Sure.
Among
but there's
the some
changes on it.
Okay, but I mean, it's basically the same idea.
I agree. I think I said it really nicely at the beginning. I don't remember exactly what I said. The sentiments are definitely part of the culture, and it's like this revolving door.
So okay, I then. Mean, but the whole church is that way. I mean, I don't understand why it's a relevant point. Everything in the church is that way. It all gets passed along from one person
and
to the
changed.
Other.
It's just this man-made stuff.
Okay, so but everybody accepts not
Wait,
everybody, but people
say
accept,
that
I don't think this is a Mark E. Peterson creation.
You
think,
said that, Glenn.
I think it's a hoax.
Okay, it's
You're
a hoax.
Beating a dead horse.
It's a hoax, Glenn. Let's read it.
I don't know. You read Mark E. Peterson. He's got some other zingers out there. Yeah.
I could be wrong. I've been wrong about other things.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So are you done with the hoax thing?
You brought it up.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, some of these are fun. We don't want to miss them. Let's get moving.
They're awesome. Keep going.
Okay. Suggestions. Let's skip down to suggestions. Number 1, pray daily. Ask for the gifts of the Spirit that would strengthen you against temptation. Pray fervently and out loud when the temptations are the strongest. I guess what the only thought I'd like to interject at this point is, again, it's this juxtaposition of spirituality versus sexuality. And actually, I think Mormons can be quite progressive on this front, you know, because I think if you looked at modern Mormon teachings, it's like sex is good, have lots of sex, but only after you're married.
And to make babies.
Well, I don't even think that's around anymore. That 20 years ago, yeah, that would have been the case. It would have been, you know, no birth control, sex about procreation. You're going to be hard pressed to find people who say that today. They're still out there, but that's not a mainstream church teaching anymore. But you know, this thing, but here again, they're saying prayer is over here, masturbation is over here. You can't be a sexual being and be a prayerful being in the same instance. Number two, follow a program of vigorous daily exercise. The exercise reduces emotional tension and depression are absolutely basic to the solution of this problem. Double your physical activity when you feel stressed increased.
That probably would be the most helpful thing on the list.
Depends on where you go exercise.
and where you're doubling
and the
your activity.
And suggestions seem less clownish. They seem less over the top than a guide to self-control.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I had a mission companion that would do jumping jacks in the middle of the night.
There you go.
Yeah, I had one that did push-ups all the time.
Wow.
You guys were just too hot for them, I suppose. All right, three. When the temptation to masturbate is strong, yell stop to those thoughts as loudly as you can in your mind and then recite a pre-chosen scripture or sing an inspirational hymn. It is important to turn your thoughts away from the selfish need to indulge. Set goals of abstinence. Begin with a day, then a week, month, year, and finally commit to never doing again. Until you commit yourself to never again, you will always be open to temptation. This is, you know, I'm speaking just from personal experience. The longer you go, the more the drive to do so is overpowering. If you don't do it, you'll have nocturnal emission. It's like you can't get away from it as a male. So, in a way, to me, masturbation is like a sex control, like a release valve, a sex control device. Otherwise, you can start getting...
Everything looks like sexy things. Yeah. Every person is like a turn-on, and every doorknob looks tempting.
I'm not
But don't you just get to a point where you just don't think about it?
No.
Is that a question for me? Don't think about what?
If you're setting goals for abstinence, like I had a friend that made like a scripture snake type thing where he took construction papers, one for every day, and hung it up in his room, you know, and like setting these very obvious physical goals where it was always right there in front of him and keeping that right there in front of him, it was always there. But when you stop thinking about it, I mean, I'm just going by personal experience too. It's not, I don't know. It just seems like it's not a big deal. Like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. A nocturnal emission, what's the big deal?
Well, Glenn, I have a question. What helped you stop thinking about it? What were the techniques you used?
It didn't worry me anymore. Like, I just didn't care.
Wait. Yourself permission?
Yeah, what Probably. Do you mean you didn't care?
It didn't matter if it happened or if it didn't.
That's okay, the key.
So, yeah. If you care, then you can't...
Wait, it didn't matter if what happened or didn't. Are you talking about nocturnal emissions?
I'm talking about masturbation. I'm talking about like setting goals of abstinence. But even...
Wait.
Because I'm thinking back like as a missionary, and like there were times where I would set... Because what you were talking about, John, was how the longer that you go of abstinence, the harder that it is to stay because there's like a drive to do it again. Isn't that what you said?
It increases over
time. It's anticipation. So, even with sex, it works.
But my experience with that is that if I just stopped thinking of, like, if I kept track and I'm like, okay, I'm going on day 35, I'm going on day 36, I'm going on day 37. If I stopped keeping track of that, it just, like,
I didn't keep track. All I'm saying is for me, and I'm only speaking for me, I'm no biologist or sex therapist or anything. That for me, my sex drive will keep increasing.
Mm. So, Glenn, you're arguing against suggestion number four that by trying to keep track and setting goals and stuff actually makes it harder to stay abstinent. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I found that for me, just kind of stopped. Well, like once I stopped caring about it, it just wasn't a big deal anymore.
You know, I think you are right on as far as not caring.
And that's how a lot of sexual impulses go.
But it's also physical. I mean...
I'm sorry, Rich.
Well, it's not compulsive.
Kind of like letting go of all of this.
And I guess I'm bringing up a lot of mission stories, but I was privy to a conversation. So the mission president's wife in my mission is in charge of the healthcare. And the well-being of the missionaries. One certain elder physically couldn't do any work, couldn't walk, was in physical pain, had to go to the doctor. And the doctor says, well, you need to masturbate. And that's what the whole problem for him was. And I sat there and listened to the mission president's wife say, but I mean, don't do that. I mean, obviously you can't, he's going to tell you to do this. Don't do that, obviously. But
what was, were there any other options for the cure?
Eat bananas. And I don't know what relevance that is.
Could you get a double cure if you combine the two?
I think you could. So, and this wasn't for me, but there were probably four elders that I knew on the mission that were, had physical ailments for not being able to have this release. And I guess nocturnally it just wasn't happening for them naturally or what.
And I think, you know, going back to the first question that was asked, John, is there really harm in this? You know, once you kind of let go and you go, there really isn't, it's really not harmful. And if you can get past like the whole worthiness thing, you know, like my self-policing, then all of this, you know, setting goals of abstinence begin with the day and a week and the stuff, all this stuff.
I agree. That's a healthy attitude, but the church doesn't have that healthy attitude.
No. Right.
All right. Yeah. Change number five, change in behavior and attitude is most easily achieved through a change in self-image. Spend time every day improving your, imagining yourself strong and in control, easily overcoming tempting situations. So repeated the same thing. And once again, I would say sex drive is more chemical than it is a will to power. Seven.
Six.
Begin to work daily on a self-improvement program. Relate this plan to improving your church service. To improve your relationships with your family, God, and others, strive to enhance your strengths and talents. And this is the standard Sunday school answer again. You know, the solution to every problem is to pay your tithing and pray and read your scriptures, right?
Obey and service.
Seven, be outgoing and friendly. Force yourself to be with others and learn to enjoy them. As long as they're not masturbators, apparently, though. Wasn't that number one?
Gotta avoid them.
Screen your friends wisely.
Learn to enjoy working and talking to them. Use principles of developing friendship found in books such as How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I've read that book. It's kind of a little Machiavellian. Anyway. Okay. Eight, be aware of situations that depress you or cause you to feel lonely, bored, frustrated, or discouraged. These emotional states can trigger the desire to masturbate as a way of escape. Plan in advance to counter these low periods through various activities, such as reading a book, visiting a friend, doing something athletic.
But, just the idea of masturbating can cause you to feel those ways, and then you have to masturbate to feel better.
I was going to say, I can understand that advice, but I would tell in reverse. If somebody came to me and said, you know, I'm lonely, bored, and frustrated, I'd say, have you masturbated lately?
Exactly.
Maybe that's the problem.
Well, and one point is it seems like many of these seem to be giving you a roadmap to run away from your discomfort or feelings. And are the feelings really going to go away if you keep running? I mean, feel them.
What a good release masturbation is for some of those things. And then
right,
you feel
that's
better.
True. And that really has, and I really don't think masturbation has to do with it, but they're taking very normal things about people that you have stress, you have problems, you have traumas that crop up, you feel uncomfortable. And they're telling you, this is telling you, you need to masturbate.
Right. It triggers the desire to masturbate.
All right, let's get back into the crazy ones. Number nine.
I did read a study a few years ago that suggested, and I wish I had a reference on this, that masturbation can actually increase a sense of loneliness and desire if it makes somebody feel like they're not worthy of being with somebody else. I mean, if they already feel alone by themselves. So there could be some merit there.
Well, everyone's individual. If it hurts you, don't do it. If you love it, go ahead.
Yeah. But I think if it hurts you, don't do it is good advice. But, you know, almost everybody has some aspect of their life they're not fully in control on. And, you know, like if you overeat, you can feel like terrible every time you overeat. But at some point, it's going to be more healthy to say acceptance. You need to work on the problem.
Yes.
And I would say everybody's got something like that. But sometimes it's the healthier thing to do, say, you know, that's okay. I am what I am. I'm going to work on that problem, but I accept it. And I think that's kind of what Glenn was saying about when he stopped keeping his calendar.
Right. But overeating is more harmful than masturbation. So it's not that great.
Well, and one part of this is the idea, it seems recently in social work fields, this idea of harm reduction. You can't do harm elimination because it's almost self-defeating. You can't completely eliminate things, or at least if you're shooting for that, you hurt yourself. But if you just concentrate on reduction, so if you smoke a pack a day, try smoking one fewer.
Right. Instead of completely stressing about the fact that you're, still smoking, celebrate the fact that you're smoking less than you were last week.
Yeah. And if it was harmful, and where, of course, masturbation isn't.
Yeah. And to reiterate, the only harm on masturbation is if you think it's bad.
Right. That's what causes the guilty feelings.
Okay, number 9, make a pocket calendar for a month on a small card. Carry it with you, but show it to no one. If you have a lapse of self-control, color the day black. Your goal will be to have no black days. The calendar becomes a strong visual reminder of self-control and should be, or lack thereof, or could and should be looked at when you're tempted to add another black day. Keep your calendar up until you have at least 3 clean, clear months.
So once you color it black, then you're free. That's like a free pass for the rest of the day, right?
You might. Oh no, it's bad. I wonder what happens to me every Tuesday.
Good point.
It's horrible.
To me, this is the antithesis of what they were saying up here before. They're saying don't think about it and to have it track it.
Yeah. They did say set goals and keep track, so that goes along with that one.
But just that process of scribbling out that day, I lost this day. You know what I mean?
It is no good.
That's
me.
A sad thing, really.
What I did with my calendar, that's horrible. I'm sorry, Rich.
No, you're fine. You. I'd like to hear about your calendar, Glenn.
Well, no, I had percentages of like, and so, like the masturbation was just like one of. Like listening, because this was all stuff I was doing when I was a missionary. And so it was like listening to music was one thing and masturbation was another and whatever other mission rules. Like we had to shine our shoes every day or eat wheat cereal every day. So there were all
wheat
these things.
Cereal.
And like if I did them all, I got 100%.
Oh,
and so
Glenn,
it was,
poor thing.
I know. That was me. So like I would have 4 days of 100% and then it would go down to 90% and 70. And I used code words. So if anybody saw my calendar, they wouldn't know which one I didn't achieve because, I didn't want to be embarrassed if somebody knew that I wasn't shining my shoes.
So now we know why.
Or if I was.
You are so naughty.
Dropped off in Japan because Glenn wasn't shining his shoes and was shining other parts.
That's right. All right.
Number 10, a careful study will indicate you have had the problem at certain times and under certain conditions. Well, I was joking about this. They're serious. Try and recall in detail what your particular time and conditions were. Now that you understand how it happens, plan to break the pattern through counter activities.
Counters work sometimes.
All right. Robin, you said you wanted to read number 11?
I sure do. This is one of my faves. Okay, number 11. In the field of psychotherapy, there is a very effective technique called aversion therapy. When we associate or think of something very distasteful with something which has been pleasurable but undesirable, the distasteful thought and feeling will begin to cancel out that which is pleasurable. If you associate something very distasteful with your loss of self-control, it will help you to stop the act. For example, if you are tempted to masturbate, think of having to bathe in a tub of worms and eat several of them as you do the act. It sounds goofy, but it actually works.
You've tried it.
No, this is how fetishes are made, yeah. Folks. You don't want to have to think of eating worms to be able to orgasm.
Well, the church is big on aversion therapy. That's what the whole shock therapy at BYU when they were lighting up the homosexuals in the 70s.
And not just BYU.
And it doesn't work, in case anybody's wondering. Aversion therapy is...
No, I actually worked with one of the clinical monitors who gathered some of the data for the clinical study that they used to prove the worms and that put together one of the acceptance criteria on that.
Is that a euphemism?
They asked, do you love worms or do you hate worms? And if they actually loved worms, they wouldn't let them into the study.
Interesting.
It's true.
All right, 12. During your toilet and shower activities, leave the bathroom door or shower curtain partly open to discourage being alone in total privacy. Take cool, brief showers. This doesn't help your companion's masturbation efforts at all. If you're like showering with the door open and everybody can see you, about a little team spirit here. Cold showers, really? Okay.
Cool, brief showers.
I had a companion that once tried to break out of a shower. He was in there for like 3 seconds and threw open the door and expected to just see me with like concubines or something.
he's going
to
catch.
Uh-huh. Oh, he was trying to catch. He had his suspicions. It was awesome.
Okay, let's see. Where are we at? We're at number 13. Arise immediately in the mornings. Do not lie in bed awake, no matter what time of day it is. Get up and do something. Start each day with enthusiastic activity.
Jumping jacks again.
Yeah.
I guess this is 13 is the morning wood problem, I suppose, is what they're getting at here.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
14, keep your bladder empty. Refrain from drinking large amounts of fluids before retiring.
What does that have to do with anything?
Actually, it has a lot to do with things. Sorry.
But for men, what the heck?
My wife.
I don't know about men.
I know for women, it kind of can feel better, right? But I don't think that has anything to do with men.
My wife brought this up last night. She's an ICU nurse. And they were reading through these, and one of the male nurses there, on point 14, I guess that is actually a physical thing that you can have more of an erection at night if you have a full bladder.
Really?
So there's your answer.
Wow.
I have no idea if it's credible.
And an erection always means.
Oh, yeah.
No. Erotic.
Right.
They're taking away all our fun. Darn it.
And one of the versions, and I was trying to find it earlier when you were asking me the question, John. That's why I was a little distracted. I couldn't find it, but it gave much more detail on 14 as to why it said keep the bladder empty. I just couldn't find it.
Hmm. Okay. All kidding aside, number 15. Reduce the amount of spice and condiments in your food. eat as lightly as possible at night. I thought they told us to eat like pigs up at number. Where was it?
Yeah, don't worry about your weight. Go and eat.
Go eat.
Just don't put any ketchup on your French fries.
You've heard the thing about Tabasco sauce, right? The Tabasco sauce is a aphrodisiac?
No.
Yeah.
It says reduce the amount of condiments in your food.
It's a lot of mustard on your hot dog there, Elder.
That makes no sense. Does it make it feel better?
All right, 16. Wear pajamas that are difficult to open, yet loose and not binding. I thought they told us to wear tight pajamas up here before. I'm getting confused.
Difficult to open is the key. Buttons, lots of buttons.
Number 17, avoid people, situation, pictures, or reading material that might create sexual excitement. Okay. People? Sorry. I don't know. Number 18, it is sometimes helpful to have a physical object to use to overcome this problem. Like a riding crop? Is that
what? That's my fave.
A Book of Mormon held firmly in hand, even in bed at night, is proven helpful.
You hold it in one hand, though. I mean, what are you doing with your other one?
All right, maybe Glenn is right. Maybe.
It's okay if it's only one
maybe
hand.
Somebody's making this stuff up.
Thank you. Another version has a Bible instead of the Book of Mormon. And yeah, I mean, you know. The thing with this list is it's very clever the way that this one's written, because it starts out much more believable, and as you get towards the end, it starts getting a little bit more ridiculous. Although the worms, I think, takes the cake on this one. That one's pretty.
We're about to number 19. In very severe cases, it may be necessary to tie a hand to the bed frame
with a tie.
Oh, you mean like a necktie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In order,
kinky.
He doesn't want you buying actual like fur lines.
No, just use your tie because you're a missionary, right?
In order, the habit of masturbating in semi-sleep condition can be broken. This can also be accomplished by wearing several layers of clothing, which would be difficult to remove while sleeping.
Half asleep. They're trying to get rid of the half asleep masturbation problem.
People have done this. Missionaries have done this.
What? Masturbated while they're half asleep?
No, tied their hands to the bedpost.
I believe
how do you
it.
Tie both of your hands to the bedpost, and then how do you untie them?
You have your.
Are you using your
kinky
feet?
Partner?
You just tie your the action side down.
Some entrepreneurial person out there has to actually make this like an easy, snappable.
Elder cuffs.
How to do that? Yeah.
Velcro would maybe be handy.
hey, bro, time me up. I just can't imagine anybody really, you know. Yeah. I don't know. Set up a reward system for your success. It does not have to be a big reward. A quarter in a receptacle. Each time you overcome, reach a goal. Spend it on something which delights you. It will be a continuing reminder of your progress.
Something that delights you for a quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a dollar in one of the other ones. I'll stop.
I would worry that people would think it was a swear jar and that I had a potty mouth.
Well, and how about this? Well, my version, the one from Light Planet, says, you can do it. The joy and strength you will feel when you do will give your whole life a glow of satisfaction and fulfillment. Isn't that afterglow? I don't know.
It's spiritual afterglow, not the... All right, number 21. Do not let yourself return to any past habits or attitude patterns that are part of your problem. Satan never gives up. Be calmly and confidently on guard. Keep a positive mental attitude. You can win this fight. The joy and strength you will feel when you do will give your whole life a radiant and spiritual glow of satisfaction.
Oh, I'm so sorry I came early.
Some people do that.
So,
if Satan is like kind of the Antichrist, then wouldn't he also be kind of lazy? Maybe, how do we know he doesn't give up?
I don't.
Maybe he's just kind of like a. Maybe he is kind of lazy. I don't know. I didn't see that line in the other ones. I kind of like that line here. Satan never gives up.
You know, the problem,
maybe it is there, and I just didn't pay attention to it.
It's even in italics.
Yeah,
I know I brought this up in past podcasts, but it's worth bringing up again. The problem with the Mormon conceptualization of repentance and all that sort of stuff is, if you masturbate, you are a masturbator. You know, if you drink alcohol, you are an alcoholic. If you look at porn, you're a porn user. So the problem is masturbation, as we've mentioned over and over again, is pretty normal. It's pretty healthy. A normal, healthy young man, especially who's not in a sexual relationship, is likely going to masturbate occasionally from time to time, even if he's trying real hard. But the problem is, once he does, you know, he can go through all this stuff and spend 8 months clean and celibate. And, you know, he takes himself out to dinner. It's a nice meal.
Looks at himself in the mirror a little bit.
You know, he's not wearing six layers of clothing. But you know, my point is, he's now undone all of his repentance. Mm-hmm. Satan never sleeps. He's now a masturbator again.
Oh, he's worse.
Yeah, he really failed this time.
Yeah, he's worse.
So as long as you have this big act of repent, you know, you can't go to the temple, you can't do that, and you have to stop this activity, because it's not like in these sort of things you see in a lot of speeches, it's not like, we want you to reduce it, you know, masturbation's not that good, try to cut back a little bit. That's not what it's talking about here. It's saying, you got to overcome this.
Can I share my favorite anti-masturbation story from my mission?
Please.
This is one of those supposed stories that the mission president, just before my mission president, delivered in his own conference, where he stood and said, supposedly, sisters, I'm standing here before you telling you, start wearing your hose. And elders, I'm standing here telling you, stop playing with yours.
Oh.
Every time an elder comes before me with the problem of masturbation, I give him a CTR ring to wear. And at this point, every elder out there in the audience that had a CTR ring sat on his hand.
Oh.
And so that's the story, the way that it was told in my mission. And whenever it was told, I heard it several times, everyone would crack up. And they just absolutely loved that story. Did you guys ever hear that?
No.
Or is this new
first
news
time? Ladies wear your hose. And
yeah. I mean, that one's kind of got that nice parallel. But you've heard the thing about the CTR ring and masturbation?
No.
You haven't?
Uh-uh.
That people wear it as a deterrent?
No,
they give it to 8-year-olds. I've never heard that before.
People on the board? Anyone?
Maybe that's why it has the little, like, sliding on the other side, so it gives you a nice pinch. I don't know.
Well, you know, when I, and I'm sure this is true for a lot of people, when I was a teenager and I was masturbating, I thought every time, and I would feel horrible, and I would think, well, if, you know, as soon as I get married, then, you know, that will just totally go away. It will not be something that I would even think about or desire. And you get married, and it's still present. It's still something that serves a purpose, a special purpose beyond, you know, intercourse and relationships with someone else. It's something, it's not always just sexual. It serves another purpose, I think, a lot of times. And it's kind of healing and soothing, like Robin said.
Yeah, I would venture it's part of the very, you know, a healthy sexual relationship. You know, I'm not qualified to make that statement, but, you know,
it is. It just because you're masturbating when you're married doesn't mean that you're not having a fulfilling sexual relationship with your partner. It's a totally different thing.
Correct. Right. And I remember seeing a Family Home Evening Manual that really incensed me, claiming that that's not okay in marriage. And I'm like, well, what if you want to do it together? Mm-hmm. That's a mutual masturbation that works.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Right. It serves many purposes.
You have to have radical acceptance of yourself before you can show that kind of love and acceptance to someone else in the way they truly deserve it, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think for the last thought here, you know, why did we select this talk? Obviously, as Glenn has told us over and over again, it may or may not be as real as someone have us believe. But I think attitudes about masturbation in the church and in society in general need to change. It's something that, you know, has been, and I think it is changing. You know, it's becoming very acceptable in the media, you know, to joke about and acknowledge masturbation. You would never see that like if you're watching TV in the 50s. So I think that that's a positive change, and I think the same sort of thing needs to happen in the church. They don't need to like get up and joke about it in sacrament or anything, but I think it'd be healthy to take it down a few notches. You know, once again, there have been some serious problems, and people who are, and even out there today, there are people who are seriously suffering for something that shouldn't be an issue at all. That there is a lot of guilt, and there is a lot of self-loathing, and there's a lot of people who would otherwise be great spiritual contributors who are tied up around this issue.
And they probably end up masturbating more because of that self-loathing.
Right. And the church needs to send out a letter that says something like this, you know, from the First Presidency, bishops can no longer ask anybody about, you know, masturbation. That's a private thing. It won't be a consideration on worthiness. Don't ask. Don't probe. Don't grope.
Did you say don't grope?
Whatever. I guess my mind.
You lost me on the probing.
My mind was somewhere else.
I think even then, I mean, there's still so much that's permeated the culture. Even bishops not asking about it, I just don't think that would be enough.
Yeah.
I think there would have to be a more proactive approach to it. I mean, I don't really see it happening, but.
Well, they need to stop telling kids, you know, about self-abuse and things like this. And they should, if they're going to talk to kids about sex, they should mention masturbation as a great, safe outlet for their sexual feelings.
Well, definitely.
Well, I think it starts with the parents, you know, with the parents. And if you are able to have maybe the support of the bishop and I don't know, who cares? I'll stop.
Let me add a little. But if you really do push the self-abuse, what's the next logical connection? What you do to yourself is considered abuse. What happens when your spouse does it? Mm-hmm. What is it then? It seems to make a logical connection that you would then start connecting that with abuse. And how healthy is that in a marriage?
Yep. I do see a growing trend. It's probably a very small movement, but among like New Order Mormons who are going into interviews with their children, who say, you know, I'm not going to allow the bishop to interview my 13-year-old daughter unattended. And I think that's probably a good move. If I was going to give people advice, I would say that. If you're still in the church, you know, it's not a bad idea to sit there and say, you know, there's nothing, bishop, that you, you know, you can't ask in front of me. And then if he asks something like that, say, that's, don't ask about that. Because I do think that we, to be healthy in any relationship, you need boundaries. And for so long, the church has abused their boundaries, and they need to reestablish good, healthy boundaries with their membership. And this is one that the church needs to stay the hell out of it. It's none of their business, and it doesn't cause any problems. And it's just stupid. And it's just silly.
Amen.
All right. Anybody have any last minute thoughts on the sin that dare not mention its name? All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues on our website at mormonexpression.com. You can go there and check out our new frou-frou layout and all the great things going on there. Don't forget about our live show on August 6th. It'll be great. And we do have our essays contest coming up, so you can start getting ready to prepare your 10-minute essay on anything dealing with Mormonism.
And the cruise in January.
The cruise in January 27th, 2012. You can go and reserve your spot, and it's only $25, and it's fully refundable. So
the cruise isn't $25, but the reservation.
The reservation's $25.
That'd be nice.
And what else? Oh, make sure to sign up for the newsletter to hear the inside track and all that other stuff. All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.